Now we want to talk about those great moments in sport, international and national, where people surpass themselves in common decency. And we have two uncommonly decent people to talk about this genre of sportsmanship. They are being RT Sports commentator George Hamilton in a class of his own. And also Mr. Paul Smith, who shares a name with my favourite clothes designer, but of course he's nothing of the same. He's something completely different. He's an expert in this area, I think it'd be fair to say. Paul, George, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good morning.
I'm exhausted. I feel like I've been talking for about an hour, and a half. So over to you. What is sportsmanship, George? Can we define it?
I think sportsmanship, Wikipedia of all places has it right. It's the ethos of sport. It's what sport is about. Because while winning may be everything to the professional sports person, playing the game is also very important too, because otherwise why get involved? And it starts with the very basis of children playing together. It's about the exercise of sport, taking part.
Is it a kind of chivalry on a pitch?
It is chivalry on a pitch, yes. And if you think of where it still remains, golf is probably the best example of it nowadays, where you go out, you and I go out and play a game of golf together, just the two of us. But we're not together the whole time, because my drive goes off into the rough on the right and yours goes straight down the middle. So I have to go off into the rough and you have to trust me that I don't mess when I'm away there to get myself a better lie and so on. So it is chivalry. And at the end of it, you shake hands, say, thanks very much. That was a great 4 hours I spent with you. And that was sport. You might have won, I might have won. But the bottom line is we took part in something that we both enjoyed and we trusted each other while we did it.
Yeah, see, that there is that sense of trust. Paul Smith, what was the catalyst for you to write a book about sportsmanship?
Well, I've always loved and enjoyed the honour, integrity and nobility of amazing sports characters whilst playing intense sports events. And I thoroughly was disgusted, I guess, the Brian O'Driscoll incident when he was spear-tackled by the two Kiwis on the Lions Tour. I just felt despair that that could happen. Nothing was really said about it. Nothing happened about it. No one seemed to care. And the win at all costs syndrome seemed to kind of...
This is where he was targeted, like one of those army jet planes where they just go hone in and go, boomf, gotcha, take out the strong one.
Yeah, throw him face first to the ground. And one can break their neck. Fortunately, O'Driscoll was fit enough to react quickly and land on his shoulder and smash his shoulder instead. It was a horrible moment. And what really killed me was watching a game of rugby in Wicklow, an under-12s game of rugby with the Palomine near Greystones, in fact, George. And I heard this guy break through. He ran through and he's running for the line and these kids shouted, get him, tackle him, spear him.
Ah, right, okay.
And I thought, this is horrible. Somebody's got to say something here.
So you decided to react to a very negative story with a very positive story and to talk about the great moments of sportsmanship. George, what are the knockout moments of common decency on the sporting field for you?
Well, Darren Clark, I'm sorry we're back to golf again.
No, that's
but,
okay.
Darren Clark in the Irish Open at Carton House in 2006. Normally the event would finish on a Sunday, but the rains came and it was rained off on the Sunday. And Darren had just driven on the 9th and driven into the rough into a very bad lie. When the hooter went and they all had to come in. So they had to go back on the Monday to finish off the round and start where they left off.
Sure.
And Darren, who was in contention to win the thing, went back to his ball in the rough, heavy rough, to discover that it had moved mysteriously. And he was a bit perturbed about this because where it had been the day before, the only way out was to play it onto the fairway, which is effectively sacrificing a shot. He was never going to break par on the hole. He might well have bogeyed the hole. Mm. He went back the following day. Anyway, there's always a referee in these circumstances, so he asked for a ruling. And the referee said, what can I say? Just thank the little people. This has happened. Play it as it lies. And he wasn't happy with this. So he played the shot, although he could have taken it on and hit the green and maybe birdied it. He sacrificed that possibility by being honourable and playing the shot he would have had to play had he had to play it the day before. And he ended up losing the event. He finished third. Thomas Bjorn won it. He retained the Irish Open. And he wasn't even second. Clark was two shots behind and finished third.
It's just remind me of when we're playing. This sounds really silly, but when we're playing Trivial Pursuit, you know, with the family or whatever, and if the question has to be absolutely right, and if it's not, you kind of, will I give you that? Don't give it to me. I don't want it because I don't want you to come back to me in an hour saying, well, I gave you that one. Yeah. No. What about you, Paul? Give us an
example. Well, 1936, Carl Ludwig Lutz Long, a German, during the Hitler's Olympics.
Oh yes.
When Hitler was kind of trying to prove his Aryan supremacy point. Outsteps Jesse Owens, the American amazing athlete who went on to win four gold medals in the 100, 200, 4 by 100 and the long jump. He was struggling in the long jump, and in those days it was called the broad jump. And he'd twice been disqualified for hitting the marker as he launched himself. And the German noticed him. And this young German, Carl Ludwig Lutz Long, went over and said, look, you're such a good jumper. All you need to do is go an inch behind the bar and go for it. You'll clear it, no problem. So he listened to him and he did that. And he sailed over and he qualified and he went on to the final and he won it. And Lutz, befriended him. And Jesse Owens said after the event, it took a lot of courage for him, Lutz, to befriend me in front of Hitler. You can melt all the medals and cups I have, and they wouldn't be a plating on the 24-carat friendship that I have for Lutz Long.
Ooh,
at that moment.
Powerful words, aren't they? Yeah.
And he escorted him off the arena with his arm round him, the young blonde German, in front of Hitler. You know, taking his life in his
That
his
took
hands.
Some neck, didn't it? I mean, okay, text coming into 51551. Greatest Irish sporting moment, says somebody, was Eamon Coughlin in the World Athletics Championships in Helsinki in 83. I remember when he punched the air as he went past the Russian to win, and I think his father had just died around that time. Robbie Fowler beseeching the referee not to send David Seaman off after Seaman fouled him. Fowler, that is, not the ref. He tried to talk his own team out of a penalty and a one-man advantage. Also, Di Canio plucking the ball out of midair rather than trying to score because he saw that the goalie was badly injured. Are those two examples tallying with where we're
Absolutely.
Going here?
Yeah. Just say, Ron, that several of those are in the book.
In the book.
Linked to the website, you can see the video clips of those moments in action.
What a clever website. Yeah. What's that called?
Well, it's www.greatmomentsofsportsmanship.com.
Okay.
Same name as the book.
It makes a lot of sense. Elsewhere, George, are the moments that stand out
for
the sportsmanship?
Yeah, the Cricket World Cup in 2003 in South Africa. Australia playing Sri Lanka in the semi-final, and the Australian openers go out. They're batting first and they're tearing the Sri Lankan attack apart. They're 34 for no wicket after five overs, so the Sri Lankans change their bowler to spinner, who's a slow bowler. And this is the invitation to the batsman, Adam Gilchrist, who is seeing the ball, as he put it himself in his autobiography, like a football. So he goes for this big sweep shot. He mistimes it. He smashes it off his pad. It shoots up into the air and the Sri Lankans catch him out. And the umpire at the other end is standing, shaking his head. And Gilchrist is saying, I'm out. And the Sri Lankans are saying, how's that? And the voice in his head was emphatic, he says in the book, and he walked. And he went. He gave himself out, despite the umpire. And he said the reason was he had to be honest with himself.
Fantastic.
Yes, you see, that seems to be part of the decency of sportsmanship.
It is. At the highest level, I think the ultimate sports people only want to win properly. They don't want the sleeving, the cheating approach. Yeah. And for me, there was Takhti, a wonderful Iranian, back in 1956. And the Iranians have a wonderful attitude to sport, particularly wrestling, where they're trained to be pure, truthful and good-tempered, first and foremost, and secondly, strength of body. And Takhti was involved in an Olympic match, actually, when he was told that the Russian wrestler he was wrestling had his right knee was injured. And he refused to work on the right knee. He worked on the other guy's left knee, you know. And he was such a guy, he did that sort of thing. They believe it's linked with Sufi spiritualism, I believe.
Oh, yeah, right, okay.
The whole wrestling houses, you know, the Iranian wrestling, the Zarkana, the houses of strength, where they learned kind of nobility and integrity and honesty. There's another moment with Takhti, who's a great hero in Iran. Another moment when he was fighting another Russian, and he beat him, and he noticed that the Russian's mother was distraught with tears during the Olympics. And after the game, he went over to her, and through kind of pidgin language and expression, he said, he is a great fighter. Oh. You know, I'm sorry about the fight, but your son is a great fighter. And she jumped up and gave him a great big kiss, you know, and floods of tears.
That's a really lovely story, a bizarre one, covered in sweat and blood. Text to 51551, 2003 World Handball Championships in Croke Park. The final was between Brady and Healy. Brady got a cramp in the second game and, as per the rules, got 15 seconds to recover, but he didn't. Healy gave him his 15-second timeout, which was truly a great sporting gesture. Brady went on to win the game. So everyone's got their moments. George, give us another one there.
Okay. Soccer fans here will be familiar with Clive Clark from Newtown McKennedy in County Wicklow, who was a professional footballer in England. He was with Sunderland. He went on loan and he was with Leicester City. And they were playing Nottingham Forest in a Carling Cup game 18 months ago. And half-time came and Forest were leading Leicester City 1-0. They're big rivals in the East Midlands in England.
Yeah.
Anyway, into the dressing room, Clive Clark collapsed. He'd had a massive, I think it was a heart attack. Yeah. But he was seriously ill. He nearly died. But the Nottingham Forest, the home medical staff came and they looked after him. They got him off to hospital. But there's no way they could continue the game. So the two managers went out of the pitch and announced to the crowd, we've had a medical emergency. The game has been abandoned. It'll be replayed. 3 weeks later, they came back to play the game again. Nottingham Forest against Leicester City, big rivals. And Leicester City, with the blessing of the Football League in England, went to Nottingham Forest and said, listen, you were 1-0 up at halftime in the game. We're giving you a goal. But you can't do that in football. Yeah. It has to be scored. Nottingham Forest players drew lots to see who would score this goal that Leicester were going to give them. Nottingham Forest kicked off, and the namesake of the gentleman beside me, Paul Smith, the Nottingham Forest
Another
goalkeeper,
yes.
The Nottingham Forest goalkeeper was allowed to dribble through the Leicester City defence and score the goal. And you look at at the report of the match now, it says goal scorers Nottingham Forest, Smith won in the first minute, first action of the game. They went 1-0 up, but the beauty of it is, and maybe this is the bottom line, Leicester City were magnanimous in doing this to Nottingham Forest. They went 1-0 down as per pre-arranged, and then they went at it hammer and tongs and won the game in the final minute by 3-2. The goal happened to be scored by Ray Clemens' son, Stephen, but Ray Clemens, former England goalkeeper. But that's just another little moment of stats for you. But,
yeah, it's beautiful.
But the story of that night, of these two bitter rivals. Yeah. From the East Midlands of England, and that they would do that. And the good news, the best news of all, is that Clive Clark is well.
That's good news. Leicester City Football Club actually contacted me about that story.
Did they?
And they've put it into the programme twice, the two pre-Christmas matches, and kind of promoted it amongst their players, in the players' lounge as well as the shop.
Well, isn't it a good thing to promote it, particularly if there are kids at football matches with their dads or you know, watching it? Because the idea of sportsmanship, you'd worry, is being eroded by, you know,
Maradona's hand of God.
Money, but also money and the fact that it's all about how much you can earn. And that, you know, if you score a goal, it means you're worth more, as opposed to you're worth more as a human being, you're worth more as a commodity, aren't you?
One of the acid tests has to be Maradona's hand of God. Now, a lot of Irish people would say, good on you, you know. But if you say that, fair enough. Then what about Neil Back's hand of the divil, you know, against Leicester, against Munster in Cardiff, you know? So do you agree with that, yes or no? That's a kind of acid test if people want to measure themselves and say, well, are you really into sportsmanship?
Yes.
It has been going on since time immemorial. I mean, I recall, it's a long time ago now, but when Noel Murphy was Ireland's wing forward and on the blind side of the scrum, he was taken out with a hook in Cardiff Arms
Grand
Park.
Price, yeah.
The referee was on the other side of the scrum and Murphy was packing down, and next thing, wham! Everybody on that side of the stadium saw it, but the referee didn't, the touch judge didn't, and the game went on. So it has been going on, but it is wonderful to think that there are still moments that sport is no longer. Sport is often peopled by what David Lacey in The Guardian called the cheats, liars, mercenaries, and spivs. Yeah. But there are still honourable people
like Eusebio. I mean, for me as a kid growing up, it's my almost earliest memory of football. I think 1966 World Cup was my earliest, but 1968, you know, United winning the European Cup. You know, it was 1-1. Eusebio breaks through. He was the golden boot scorer from the World Cup 2 years prior.
Yeah.
Eusebio, the world's best goal scorer, breaks through. He's on the edge of the box with Alex Stepney in front of him. He drills it. Somehow Stepney saves it, and not only saves it, holds it. And at that point, Eusebio stops and he starts applauding him. Now, on the website, you can see this. It's 2 minutes into the video clip. You'll see him do that. And he's applauding him. And then he tries to put his arm around his shoulder to say, that was a wonderful save. Stephanie's freaking out. He's saying, go away. There's a European Cup final going on here.
Don't touch me. I mean, the great political moments that I'm thinking of, the most famous football match of all in the trenches in World War One, when the Germans and the Brits got the ball out and said, come on, it's Christmas Day. You know, quite a nice scene, one would have thought. But more recently, I think it's another example in the book, Paul, is Iran and America, United States of America, 1998.
Absolutely incredible.
That's not widely reported.
It's not widely reported, and there's not enough good stuff told regarding sportsmanship. This is France 98, Iran, USA. They've broken off diplomatic relationships. So they're going to play each other in a World Cup match. I mean, this is kind of surreal stuff.
Sure.
They're almost at war, but they're going to play a game of football. And, you know, they decided that this game could explode. Anything could happen. But the players decided that they were going to meet before the game, that themselves, no committees, whatever, they wanted to meet each other and to be sure that what was going to win on the day was, you know, the truth of sportsmanship, the brotherhood of sport, brotherhood of football in particular. So that they met behind the scenes and they exchanged greetings and toasts to each other, and they went on the pitch and they exchanged gifts before the game, flowers and little medal pins. And they when they slipped or fell on the ground, they helped each other up off the ground. UEFA were amazed by the photograph at the beginning of all the players arm in arm, and that's in the book as well. You're arm in arm with each other, beside each other, intermingled. These guys are almost at war, but they're playing a united game of football. And it was a wonderful game of football. UEFA gave them the Fair Play Award, and Iran went on to win 2-1. But the Americans invited the Iranians to come back to America on a tour specifically after the World Cup to further, you know, develop the relationships between the footballers, the footballing brothers, if you like.
Thus illustrating how sport transcends politics, obviously. Absolutely. Or at least should do. More text to 51551. Nadal shows incredible sportsmanship, says Joy Marshall. When he won Wimbledon, he still said Federer was the best player in the world, which is very gracious.
It's probably
easier to say when you have the top prize in your hand. Shane Dublin says the sporting gestures that he liked, English rugby team coming here in 1973 when nobody else would. A great quote from their captain: after we beat them, we might not be any good, but at least we turn up.
John Pullen, that's John in the Pullen book as well. I saw the photograph of that team today. I was looking through your book, and I was enjoying seeing the faces, and David Duckham, for instance, and the story about him, that he was worried about coming. And you tell it in the book, and Bill McBride, Willie John, said, look, Penny will look after your wife, I look after you. And that was the way it went.
It's fantastic. In fact, before the Ireland-England game in Croke Park, John Pullen came over to a dinner with Tony O'Reilly, the Ireland Fund. And it's on YouTube. Again, it's linked to the book. so on. Yeah. But he got another 8 minute ovation when he walked into the dinner.
Really? Yeah.
X years later.
Yeah, and in fact, I remember because my own dad would talk about that as saying that, you know, despite all the difficulties, people always remember that English team for having the gumption and the neck to come over and breaking through all the dark muck that was prevalent at the time. Elsewhere, Grania in Dublin says, you have to mention the Munster-New Zealand match to reopen Thomond Park. The sportsmanship of the Munster fans and the respect that was shown was awesome. Is that, I suppose...
It is. Can I urge you to read something about that match, which is written by a Kiwi guy who just was absolutely enthralled. And it's the finest piece of rugby writing I've written, or I've read it, excuse me. And it's a guy called Martin Moody. He's a Kiwi journalist, and he's got a thing called the Moody Report. It's actually linked to my website on the blog. There's a link to that article. But he basically says, you could hear a dog barking on the next street. When the Kiwi kickers were kicking the ball.
It's a great description.
The silence was there, yeah. And he said, if during the World Cup, if you see a Munster man, take him by the arm to your house, feed him, drink him, and take care of him. Such is the nobility of brotherhood. Yeah.
And Ulster beat them recently, I'm proud to say.
Oh, you would do that, wouldn't you, George?
I would, yes.
How unsportsmanlike of you.
That was a bit below the belt.
Joan Wexford says, off the pitch, when Wexford lost the football semi-final this summer, the Tyrone supporters stayed behind to applaud the Wexford team off the field. Very emotional.
That's great.
Please confirm that at the Special Olympics, one runner fell and others stopped to help and all of them crossed the line together. Which I understand is completely true.
Fantastic.
And which is always a good one. Sean O'Dwyer says, in the first London marathon, two runners approached the finishing line. Instead of one busting a gut to beat the other and become the first winner, they joined hands and finished tied. That's quite a commitment to decency.
In the book, they couldn't break each other and they decided they go together,
Okay, what about the notion of the sportsman and the gentleman sportsman and indeed woman? Because they obviously all have to they all have to do their thing, because even though they love the art of practicing sport and the sport that they love, people look up to them. Are they still heroes, do you think, are they harder to come by? Are they just guys who are in it to make the dough?
They're still heroes. There's no doubt they're still heroes.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they have become. Shall we say, distanced from the fans. It's not the same as it used to be. Fans are now... I'm thinking of the situation, for instance, at Old Trafford, where the players come out to pick up their cars and go home after the game. They come out of a tunnel, the fans are held behind barriers, and the players are untouchable. And unless a player decides to go and sign an autograph, there is no way that a fan is going to get near him. And he won't go and sign an autograph because he knows if he signs one, he has to sign 100. So he's just a figure who walks across a car park from 50 yards away as they're all screaming his name.
So who are the beacons of sportsmanship in the modern era, do you think? Who stands out as somebody you think that goes beyond hopping in his Porsche and heading off for the hills and will stop and talk and give the time of day?
Well, I always remember... back in the early days, just for a moment before you get to today, staying in the Montrose, going to the Montrose as a kid when I was about 14, bunking off school actually from St. Michael's and running down there to get autographs of the Irish football team. I used to stay there in the Montrose.
Yeah.
And they used to stay, I remember Stephen Highway stayed with us. Paddy Mulligan, the boys were lovely. They came in and they chatted with us, but they were off downtown for a little while. But Stephen stayed behind and did maths lessons with us. We were going mad, all we want to do is talk football. So they were really down to earth guys. But I think most of them today, or a lot of them, are still very down. When you get to meet them, they're down to earth. There is that separation, there's that media barrier, there's that gate that Lansdowne would probably have, a tunnel, you know, where the players are bust in and bust out, so you don't get to meet them.
But there's a difficulty that the media age is such that it demands people to become A, media savvy, but B, just able for the public, the glare of the public eye, if you like. But their job is to be on a pitch somewhere, on a golf course somewhere. Mm. It's not to be out shaking hands like a politician or a celebrity.
It's the old thing about the player who says, if I do this, will it make me a better player? And the answer is obviously no, it won't. But it might help your perception in the public eye. It might help you in later life when you're no longer a player.
Yes, indeed. Mm. It might do. Okay.
Paul McGinley is a perfect example of a guy who's so down to earth, it's not true. And in fact, have we time for me to tell you his story?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, it was in the Ryder Cup, of course, and he'd done the job, done the business, and he's playing against rookie JJ Henry, and he'd more or less beaten him. Henry had a 25-foot putt, just a half the game. Had he missed it, it would have been America's worst ever defeat in a Ryder Cup. Cup. And McGinley gave him the pot. Now, I actually thought it was because he felt that a young rookie shouldn't have to carry the weight of a terrible defeat. And he gave him the pot. And I wrote to him and said, Paul, I just want to check this is right. And he came back to me and said, no, that's not right. Actually, what happened was he had a 25-foot pot. Mm-hmm. He was about to put it when I saw a streaker run onto the green.
No.
And as he ran, he could shout at him, don't run across Henry's line. Don't run across his line. Whatever you do, stay with him, stay outside that line. And the guy ran around his line, across his line twice, and then leaps into the lake behind him. And by the way, there's a photograph of that moment in the book. But so he decided when he'd run across his line that he compromised his line of putting, and therefore it would be totally unfair to ask him to put on a line that had been tampered with. So he said, I'll give you that putt straight away. For me, it was a lovely moment.
Yeah.
And the American captain, Tom Lehman, afterwards in his closing speech at the Ryder Cup, said... And the K Club said, you know, it was the true honour and dignity of a true sportsman was Paul McGinley.
Before we go, George, I want to mention your Lyric FM programme, which I love to relax to on a Saturday.
Kind.
No,
thank
I
you.
Really do. It's just such a, it's easy on the ear and it calms me down before the chat show. Before I go into work on a Saturday, I have to say, really lovely. But that's on. What time is that on?
Half past nine or half past 12.
Yeah, very easy on the ear, I have to say.
Thank you.
And you've got a book, I know.
A book launch, yeah. It's Tuesday week in the Mermaid in Bray. It's an interesting concept. It's called 12 Lives or a Baker's Dozen, because they're actually 13 plus some poems. It's a nursing home, Kylemore in Bray, where my dear mother passed away, and she features in the book. And it's just 12 or 13 of the residents telling their stories to Iris Park, who's a local playwright. And we're launching the book. Geraldine Plunkett's doing a reading, and The Mermaid in Bray. And you're cordially invited. I think they saw the book club possibility there.
Of course.
It's just called 12 Lives, Baker's Dozen. It's in the Town Hall Bookshop in Bray and Bookworm in Kilcool. If you want to know more, the Alzheimer's website, because all proceeds go to the Alzheimer's Society, is alzheimers.ie. And or kylemorehouse.ie is also where you can find out about it. But that's on Tuesday week, and that's another little thing I'm involved.
George, thank you. But the book we were talking about this morning, and which led to such debate, was Great Moments of Sportsmanship and Extraordinary Sports People, which is self-published by Mr. Paul Smith and is available, I presume, off the website greatmomentsofsportsmanship.com.
And Hughes and Hughes and Books on the Green and
it's all there
Leinster
too.
Store, Rugby Munster Store, and yeah. All
okay, well, I think a lot of people, and as you say, the website has clips of the moments we've been talking about too, so that's well worth going to have a look at. Great Moments of Sportsmanship.